Welcome, listeners, to another episode of Inside UMiami Medicine. My name is Amar Deshpande, a gastroenterologist and associate dean for medical education, and I'm guest hosting this episode, and a pleasure to have you today. I'd like to introduce you to Pia Iribarren. She's a fourth-year med student here at the Miller School of Medicine, and one of the trailblazers as a member of the first class of the NextGen MD curriculum. We'll talk about her really inspiring journey in medicine, which has really been shaped by resiliency, advocacy, and commitment to fulfilling her dream to become a physician. So welcome, Pia. It's great to have you. And I'm so appreciative that you're able to join us today. I just feel it's so important for people in the medical community, and particularly those aspiring into a career in medicine, to hear really great stories like your own. So thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
So you're in the final year, the home stretch, the final few months before that thing called putting your rank list together in match in the next few weeks. And a part of, as I said, a trailblazer in a new curriculum. So before we get into that and your future career plans and all that, let's start at the beginning. So tell us a little bit about your experiences growing up. You moved to this country as a very young child, and maybe a little bit about your family's ideas of why they decided to immigrate to the U.S. and how that shaped some of your early experiences.
Sure. So I was born in Chile, and that's where most of my family is, and we have many, many generations going back to Chile. My family moved to the United States when I was about a year and a half for economic reasons, mainly just the political structure. Chile had just come out of a 17-year-long dictatorship that set up an economic system that really didn't allow for people to grow. And that really is what pushed my parents to move to the United States. Initially, my father moved first, and he just kind of showed up at the airport in Miami with no real plans, just a couple hundred bucks in his pocket, and just, you know, figured out how to set up a living situation for when my mom, my brother, and I moved here a year later. And we arrived, and I grew up mainly in Pompano Beach for the first few years. And really, I think my childhood was marked by hard work. My father at the time, when I was very, very young, he was working three jobs. Worked at Publix, Domino's, and he worked at a glassmaking factory. And over a few years, he started at his own handyman business, and he then moved on to having his own construction business, doing a lot of remodeling. My mom was a stay-at-home mom, mainly because, you know, childcare was too expensive, and it just didn't make sense for her to go work. And so, you know, she stayed at home with my brother and I, and made sure that, you know, we went to school, did all our homework, all our extracurriculars. And then on our weekends, we would go help my dad, especially when he had his construction business. We would go clean the apartments that he had just finished remodeling. My parents would clean salons at the end of the day, and my brother and I would go with them and help take out the trash. And then growing up, you know, later on, we would just help in all these different projects. And so that for me really marked what work ethic meant. To just see how my parents worked so hard, and also, you know, put my brother and I in those situations so that we would really value that type of work. And so for me, that's been so, so important to, you know, to push me to you know, get an education, to have a profession while also continuing to value that type of work that people have always done. You know, and I think it really sort of marked my interest in medicine to begin with. A lot of those struggles that we had growing up financially, but also, you know, navigating a new system as an immigrant family, and also, you know, navigating as an undocumented family in particular, was always a bit challenging. But it helped me see, you know, how my parents were able to overcome a lot of that.
Yeah, you know, it's so many common threads of first generation families and commitment to hard work and perseverance and resilience and education. So it's always impressive to hear how kids have to kind of overcome so many of these things, but how it really in the long run benefits them. So it's really great that you were able to have those experiences in retrospect, even though I'm sure at the time sometimes it wasn't the easiest. Maybe if you can touch a little bit, you mentioned how it kind of formed your some of your interest in like being committed to education and all that, but maybe if you can touch a little bit on those experiences and how they may have informed a future career in healthcare. Any challenges with your family in terms of health? And of course, your parents, I presume English wasn't their first language, and how you kind of had to overcome or navigate the healthcare system with those maybe additional challenges.
Yeah, so, you know, we, because of our documentation status, we were uninsured throughout my entire childhood. And so a lot of where we would seek care for vaccines, for example, I have all these memories of going, you know, to get my vaccines before kindergarten and going to a free clinic in Broward County, and always kind of seeking care in those spaces. And otherwise, you know, I don't really recall ever having like regular annual checkups, because that just, you know, it, first of all, it just wasn't something that we knew needed to happen. And it wasn't something that we had easy access to anyways. And so, you know, the interactions that I had with the healthcare system were really in more emergency situations, either, you know, when my mom had kidney stones and, you know, she was just in so much pain that we had to take her to the emergency room. And I really recall at that time that my mom, you know, she was sitting in the waiting room in all this pain. She'd been in pain for hours, and having a physician write in the chart that she was a hysteric Latina, and that she was just, you know, exaggerating her pain. And it wasn't until a physician of color came by and saw and recognized that that was the source of her pain and you know, finally gave her adequate pain medication. And so for me, hearing that story from my mother really started to make me realize that there were a lot of these disparities, a lot of these biases in medicine. And then my own personal experiences with some health conditions growing up, and, you know, interacting with the healthcare system through the emergency room, and, you know, gave me a bit of an interest in medicine and in science and wanting to understand that more deeply. And then also, you know, connecting that back to those experiences and those challenges in with language and navigating the healthcare system and just understanding how the healthcare system here works, trying to navigate pay structures. And so both of those things combined, that interest in science plus, you know, in understanding the system itself, really kind of led me to want to pursue something in healthcare, at least.
Yeah, you know, you talked about so many of the challenges that I think there are probably a lot of people listening or watching that are thinking they're in a situation where there's too much to overcome to become a physician. And you're a great example of how you overcame a lot of that. And so much of that common thread oftentimes is mentorship and support. So can you talk just a little bit about specific, not maybe the names of people, but even like if you want to, you can, but specific situations in which mentors or support systems, whether it was in high school or thereafter, really kind of instilled in you the ability to believe that, you know, seeing what your mom went through and those challenges could lead many to believe, well, what's the point? I'm not going to be able to be successful in this business. But so what kind of, were there people that helped you realize that that was a possibility and fostered your development?
No, for sure. And I think that's the reason why I've you know, gotten to this point, is because there were people that kind of showed me the ropes. I remember so clearly in high school when I was applying to college and Googling, you know, how to become a doctor, because I just, nobody really knew what a bachelor's degree was or what it meant to apply to medical school or what the process was supposed to be. And so we were really starting from scratch. And I had so many people, you know, so many mentors in high school that just supported me in applying to college, especially at the time as an undocumented student. DACA didn't exist at that time. And so nobody really knew what it meant for me to apply to any sort of university. I was the first student in my high school that was in that situation. And so navigating those processes and having people to help me with my application, help me with interviews and things like that, really showed me how important it was to have those people. And then, you know, when I finally got to applying to medical school, I also, you know, in undergrad, I had a lot of advising that told me, you know, I don't know what to do with your documentation status. You're an immigrant, but also, you know, you're not going to have these visas. And so you're going to be an international student. It's going to be very difficult for you to get to medical school. And so that really kind of deterred me in pursuing this journey. And it was one of the reasons why I, you know, took some time off before coming to medical school. And it wasn't until I found other mentors who knew better and who had more of that technical knowledge to help me through the application process. And so since then, you know, I've always really looked for all of those mentors, because mentorship has just been the most crucial piece. Family support, of course, has been great, but you always need, I think, as a first-generation student, you need somebody to guide you and that can share that knowledge of how to do what you need to do to get to where you want to go.
Yeah. So then you get into NYU,
yes,
right? And so you move from South Florida to New York, and that kind of, and you had, and I think you were had an, already an idea that you wanted to go into medicine at the time. Mm-hmm. And so tell me a little bit about your experience at NYU. Of course, you had the regular classwork and stuff, but you then started getting involved in outreach. And you talked about so many reasons why you would want to focus specifically on those who have maybe less access to to the things to which you didn't have great access. So tell me something about the outreach work that you did when you were in college.
Yeah, so one of the volunteer opportunities that I was involved in was at Bellevue Hospital in Manhattan.
The Jackson of New York.
The Jackson of New York, exactly. And so, being there was really what sparked this interest in working in those sorts of settings. I worked at the pediatric department doing a health literacy curriculum with families in the waiting room. And it was really about, how to read medication labels, how to use syringes to give medications to a 3-month-old, use the syringe versus using a teaspoon and things like that. And learning about this curriculum and then working with those parents, I saw so much of my family reflected in all of those families and all of the immigrant families who, had these traditions back home and are now here being told one thing that's completely different from what they grew up, and how to make sense of that, how to understand this system and, the residents that are working there, the attendings, all these different people that are coming to talk to you. How do you navigate all of that? And so for me, working with those families, seeing that the experiences that my family had were still happening 10 or 15 years later, really made me realize that, the issue hasn't really changed. There's been some progress for families, I think, especially in New York. There was a lot of access for families to seek medical care, especially for children. But there was still this huge health literacy gap. And so that really sparked my interest in pursuing public health at the time. Because I felt that it was an avenue for further advocacy. And it really aligned very nicely with the advocacy work that I was doing outside of the classroom, working with some organizations in the city that were focused on expanding opportunities for higher education for undocumented or immigrant students in the city. And so being able to be part of those organizations and sharing my story and trying to open doors for those students in the city was also a really important part in kind of growing my interest in advocacy over time.
And so you took your 4 years of NYU and then a couple of years of the MPH, and it'll be a two-pronged question. So you mentioned a little bit about how the MPH was in many ways your extracurricular time and extension. Mm-hmm. We are already doing NYU. But maybe talk a little bit about, was that MPH done in part because you wanted an MPH, but with all these challenges of how to get into medical school and how that time, how were you able to then kind of realize the opportunity that getting a medical degree was still on the table and how those experiences helped inform that?
Yeah. So, my MPH, public health was something that I was interested in, as well, but part of it was just not knowing how to apply to medical school, getting this advice saying that it was going to be really challenging to apply as an international student to medical school. And at the time, there really weren't a lot of medical schools that were accepting DACA students. And so I decided to take some time off before applying to medical school. And I think, looking back, I think it was for the best. I think really at that time, I wasn't ready to apply to medical school. I didn't have a very good sense of what it meant to be a physician. I had such a focus on community work and advocacy that, perhaps public health was really what I was interested in. And so I did my degree. And at the time, I also started working at the health department in New York City as a health educator for patients with diabetes. And that work, it was along the same lines of health literacy that I was doing before. But really, through that project, I had my own patients that I was following over a year, providing education and support and goal setting and seeing how they progressed over time. And I loved doing that work. I loved having my own patient panel to follow. And so that's when I really started to understand a little bit better what it meant to be a physician and be in that position to support patients. But at the same time, I wasn't a physician. I was a health educator. And so there was a lot of barriers to how much I could do for a lot of my patients. And I started realizing that, there's education is only so much of what patient care is. There's this whole other piece of, a bigger medical team, providing referrals for patients or changing medication regimens. And so that's really what pushed me to pursue medicine, because those frustrations of not being able to do more for the patients that I was following, you know, made me realize that what I really wanted was to be a physician and to have that extra level of responsibility over patient care and to be able to do a little bit more to improve outcomes for patients. And so, you know, that through that experience, it really kind of pushed me to apply to medical school. And I think I had a better understanding of what I was getting into.
Yeah, you know, I think it's great that you did it for all the right reasons, right? Because the value of public health. And then you saw that you really value that part. And there's maybe another piece that you want to do as well. And I think you also highlighted, you know, the historical straight from college directly into medical school. You had to be either a biology or a chemistry major, right, or biochem or whatever. And,
right,
and the value of all these other things and how you were more mature, understood the healthcare system better. We love applicants from non-traditional science backgrounds because of the other soft skills that have been shown in clinical diagnosis and clinical reasoning and others. So I think it's great that you were able to get that and come in more mature and empowered to understand what medicine really is. So then you get into med school. So tell me a little bit about options and why you decided to come to the Miller School of Medicine, which is for you a return home after several years away, kind of what that acceptance meant and why this school.
Yeah. So for me, you know, I was in New York for 8 years before coming to medical school. And, you know, I had never really seen myself coming back home. But I think, you know, Miller was my first interview on the application trail. And I remember just sitting there interview day, walking around campus. It was still in person at the time.
And just before it wasn't.
Just before. And so, you know, I was that last class I got to be here in person and meeting the other students there. And I remember specifically the diversity breakfast that happened right before. And getting to meet Dr. Symes at the time and seeing all of the support that was happening there. Dr. Gervais was also a huge part of the interview day. And I remember speaking to her at the end of the interview day, specifically to ask a little bit more about my situation as a DACA student and what that looked like, you know, coming to medical school here. And I remember that she immediately gave me a hug and said, "I'm so proud of you for making it this far." And I had never had anybody kind of react in that way to me disclosing my immigration status. For her, it was a positive. There was nothing wrong with it. And so for me, I think that was the first moment where I realized that, you know, being here, I was going to be accepted in with all of my background, and that, you know, no part of my background is going to be seen as a negative. And so really, you know, I had other interviews after, but I just kept coming back to that moment. And I think afterwards, once I got accepted, I got that call from Agnes Murphy and, you know, being surrounded with my family and getting that call and that acceptance, it really just solidified wanting to be here. And I think it ended up being very timely with COVID hitting. It was, you know, it ended up being much better for me to be here closer to family and going through this whole experience with their support very closely.
Yeah. So it's great to hear how you felt embraced by the institution, which is always so important for for everyone involved, for the learners to feel that way. Can you tell me a little bit about, so that part, I played a huge role, but you had done so much work in community outreach and advocacy and caring for the underserved. Did any of that play a role in your interest in the school in particular?
For sure. I remember, you know, on interview day hearing about docs and hearing about everything that was being done and thinking, man, this is amazing that this exists here now. Maybe docs existed back then when, you know, we were first here. But just thinking this is something so incredible that's happening for this community and wanting to be involved in that sort of work. And I think I just really connected with wanting to be back in my community for medical school and just learning from the community that raised me. And I think, you know, a huge experience of being here in medical school has been to go to the Fort Lauderdale Health Fair and being back, you know, in the neighborhoods that I frequented so much growing up and being able to see those patients again now on the other side and being able to provide care there. That was something that I really wanted and something that I knew I could get here at Miller, I think exclusively.
Yeah. So maybe a couple of specifics of particular groups, organizations, leadership roles that you've had in these almost four years now that have kind of been focused in these areas.
Yeah. So, you know, I was involved with LMSA early on because it was.
Tell us what that is.
The Latino Medical Student Association. It was very important to me to be part of that community. It's really what got me through undergrad, being involved in these multicultural organizations. And so having that space here in medical school was really important to me as a source of social support, and being able to be in leadership in that role and going to the regional conferences and sharing my story with other pre-med students or first-year medical students now has been very rewarding. And being able to share, you know, as a Latina, what it means to pursue medicine. In addition, I've been heavily involved with student government, something that I didn't quite think I was going to do when I started medical school. I had really no intentions in doing big leadership roles in that way. But I think there was a point where I realized that, you know, a lot of the change that I wanted to make requires being in spaces, in meetings, or sitting at a table with people who make those decisions. And so I realized the power of being in those roles and being able to be in those spaces. And so that's really what student government gave me, the opportunity to really advocate for medical students. And just realizing, you know, for me, I have this huge interest in health disparities work. And I think one of the biggest ways that I think we can overcome a lot of disparities is by diversifying the physician workforce. And that means, you know, having a more diverse medical school class. And it means having medical students be well supported throughout medical school. And so through student government, I've been able to have that sort of focus in making sure that medical students are being heard, that, you know, the changes are being made that are being made have a medical student voice to them, and just making sure the new generation that's coming in feels well supported as well.
So that really is a nice kind of review of a lot of the stuff you've done extracurricularly. You also, as I mentioned earlier, were the first class to go through a new curriculum curricularly. So tell us, as you now wrap up your experiences in medical training, at least at the medical school level, tell us a little about your curricular experiences and how it was being part of a class that was simultaneously doing new things in a new curriculum, which also was pivoting in real time because that was exactly the same time that the pandemic was kind of kicking in.
Yeah, it was challenging at first. I'll be honest, being on Zoom and being in this very fast-paced sort of curriculum, I think first year was quite the adjustment, especially for me coming out of 4 years out of being from undergrad and taking any sort of hard science class. But I think, you know, there was so much support in for me as a non-traditional student to kind of get back into the rhythm of higher education. And I think now, especially as a fourth year student, having gone through all of the phases and being now in phase three, there is no better curriculum for me for training in medical school. Once I went through my rotations, I was entirely unsure of what to do after medical school. I had no idea what specialty I wanted. I loved all of my rotations and I could see myself doing all of them. And so having that extra time in phase three to be able to make that decision was crucial for me. I don't know how people have done it before, only having 3 months before submitting residency applications. But for me, I rotated with OBGYN, with surgery, different medicine subspecialties, and having that extra time to really be sure of my decision was so crucial for me. And I think it just set me up for more success on my sub-I. It set me up with so much more understanding of the specialty throughout my interviews. And so for me, I think the phase three side of the curriculum is the best part of it. And I think it's the piece that really, I think, sets you up very well for everything that comes after medical school. So, you know, it had its challenges, especially with COVID. But I think overall, for students like me, it's been a fantastic experience.
That's great. I don't even think I paid you to say that, which is great. And so tell me, so now you mentioned all these different experiences and various specialties, and you kind of was, oh, I could do that. I could do that. I could do that. So how did this process, and you said has some extra time, of course, in phase three compared to the historical legacy curriculum, like you mentioned. So what kind of helped inform that decision to ultimately choose, and tell us what your specialty is, and kind of what helped ultimately make that decision for you?
Yeah. So, you know, I realized throughout my rotations that I was interested in doing some sort of procedure. I liked being hands-on, which I didn't really expect. And so I was considering maybe something surgical or perhaps more procedural in internal medicine. I always thought I was going to be a primary care physician with my background in public health, but then that kind of changed a little bit because I just loved being in the hospital so much in the more acute setting. And so really, you know, I rotated with pulmonology. I was in the cath lab with cardiology for a while. I rotated with general surgery for a little bit to see, you know, can I see myself doing lab colis every day for the rest of my life? And I rotated with OBGYN as well, labor and delivery overnight. And I think what really kind of solidified my specialty was one night when I was in labor and delivery, just kind of thinking, you know, I wish I had a little bit better foundation in medicine, and really just having a strong grasp on how to manage asthma and COPD and heart failure and all these different things. And I felt that, you know, OBGYN has its specific role, and that's not really what it's supposed to be for. And that's really when I realized that, you know, medicine is really what I was looking for. I wanted to have this deeper understanding of different you know, sort of foundational medical conditions, and, you know, realizing that I could do more procedural subspecialties. You know, I think it fell in very nicely with the things that I was interested in. And I think once I rotated in the ICU and I rotated with some other procedural specialties like GI, I think it, you know, made much more sense for me to do medicine. And it fits very nicely with public health and some of the other interests that I have for my career.
So no argument here that internal medicine is the best residency. So I think for those that are listening that, again, as I mentioned early on, all the hurdles you had to overcome to get to where you are today and going to have a job as a doctor in a few months and start your official paid training part, stop paying people, and you get paid a little bit. If they think this is going to be too much, this is too much to overcome, tell us a little bit about what advice you have for anyone applying to medical school, but specifically those who might be in a situation that they think is disadvantageous for whatever reason. And any advice you give them about how your story might help inform how they can get through it as well and maybe apply to medical school.
No, I think the key is having those mentors, having those people who understand what the journey is, what the path is, what it takes to get there, and are able to provide that technical support. That's really what has gotten me to where I am. And I think it's what helps you overcome those moments of doubt. You know, I look back and I think of, you know, when I was getting ready to graduate from college and thinking, you know, can I actually go to medical school? Does this make sense? You know, is this always going to be a barrier for me, my immigration status? Am I going to be smart enough to go to be there? You know, should I just pursue something else? Is you know, should I really just be in public health and work at a health department? And it wasn't until I met some specific mentors that really made me realize that, no, I am smart enough to be there. My immigration status doesn't matter. In fact, I think it's only been a benefit to me to have had those experiences when I see them reflected in the patients that I have cared for here in Miami, and just having a better understanding of what patients are going through with their immigration status. And so, you know, all of those people that have believed in me and have, you know, provided that support, that's why I've gotten here. And I think any student who's pursuing medicine, who's had similar experiences or other experiences, needs to find that community. And there are people out there. I think that's what surprised me the most, especially here at Miller, that everybody just wants to help you get to where you want to go, whether it's, you know, my LCEs or specialty advisors, everybody. There's so many people who are willing to help when you're here. You just have to kind of look for it and be a little proactive about it, and it'll happen.
That's great. And so not yet knowing, maybe by the time people listen to this, you will have found out where you matched and what the next phase of your career is and where it is. Mm-hmm. It'll be somewhere in internal medicine, which will be great. So tell us, as you think now, this is such a kind of inflection point in your career, right? Mm-hmm. This transition from medical school to residency. And so a lot of things can change. But at least as you sit here today, what do you see the next steps being? Of course, going to residency and being a successful resident in internal medicine, plus or minus whatever mm-hmm. fellowship you end up pursuing. But what are kind of your next steps? What do you envision the future to be for you?
What I'm most excited for is to continue to work with students. You know, I've mentioned mentorship so much. The mentorship that I've received, but I've really been very careful in providing mentorship back to a lot of students. I think when I got to medical school, I was so excited to finally be able to mentor pre-med students and share my story and help them through the process. And I think, you know, going beyond that, I'm so excited to be an attending one day and be able to open up shadowing opportunities for students, which was something that I had such a difficult time trying to figure out in my own journey. And just providing that same support, that same level of advising back to students. Because of that, you know, I've grown a bit of an interest in being involved in medical education and being involved with students in that way. And specifically just making sure that our medical school classes are much more diverse and reflective of the communities that we serve. So I'm excited to just be a part of that and make sure we have more Latino students or more trans students or whatever it may be. So that our physician workforce reflects the patients that we serve, and having the opportunity to do that, the degree and all the experiences to share back to students. That's really where I see myself.
That's great. Well, I really want to thank you for taking us on the journey through all of your experiences from the very beginning until now, almost being done with medical school. So thank you so much for sharing that, because I know there's a lot of hopefully really important messages for people in various fronts about your experiences. So thank you, and thank you guys for listening.